Aloha, listeners and fellow storytellers. Welcome to episode 4 of 6-Bit Storybooks Podcast. I'm your hostess, Melissa, and it is my joy to sit with you now and chat. This week, our episode is a bit different. Melody will not be with us, but we do have a special guest. Today, we will hear from a brilliant dyer and creative businesswoman, Stephanie Alford of Space Cadet Yarn. Stephanie shares with us some great techniques that she uses for, well, let me just let her share that with you herself. She's created a helpful guide, a resource of tips and tricks, a PDF for you, dear listener, as a free gift. You know that we want to pass on great content for you each and every week. So be sure to head over to the 6bitstorybooks.com and find the podcast tab and download this free gift, as well as others from episodes past. Well, we're almost ready to start, but I'd like to remind listeners that after the interview, I'm going to tell you how you can win yarn for a project from our first issue, Unearth. And I'll also share a little bit about our very first KAL. So be sure to give a listen. And now let's meet Stephanie, head dyer of Space Cadet Yarn. I am so thankful that you joined me today, Stephanie, and I think the listeners are going to have a great time hearing from you.
I am so glad to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, let's get right to it. I know you have worked really hard on preparing something special for the listeners. And what I'd like to do is just take a minute and bring them up to speed and then turn it over to you and let you share a bit. But you are not only a fabulous storyteller with dyes and colors on yarn, but you do an amazing job of capturing the nuances of all your different yarns in photographs. I have really just loved how clear and effectively you take photos. And as a knitter, I think we are always trying to better our photographic skills, and not just for putting it on Ravelry, but some of us have blogs, some of us have actual Etsy shops, some of us just want people to see what we really are producing and making, and we take pictures and we put it on Instagram. So you do that really well, and I'd like to talk a little bit about how you came to have such a good way with taking photos, if we could just hear from you, like the bumps along the way and how you've gotten to where you are right now.
Well, yeah, it actually really has been a journey, because when I first started dyeing, when Space Cadet was a tiny, tiny little thing that I was just playing around with, I was thinking that the majority of my job was being a dyer and improving myself as a dyer. And I didn't really think about the photography, but the photography is so important, because I cannot share with my customers, I cannot share with my community what I'm doing unless I can take really beautiful photos. Mm. And I started out just taking photos with my little point and shoot, and I didn't really know what I was doing. And I actually remember the very first time I went out to take pictures, I had just opened an Etsy shop, and I was listing my very first yarns, and I knew that I needed good light, and I thought that that probably meant I needed to go outside. So I went outside, and it was a cold day, and I was holding this yarn in my hands, and I was thinking, how can you make yarn look interesting in photographs? I knew I needed to get sort of like 3, 4, 5 photographs of this one skein of yarn. And I mean, you can make yarn looks beautiful in photographs, but how do you take one skein and take 5 photos and make all 5 photos look interesting? And I put the skein down on the table, and I kind of set myself up, and my fingers were getting cold because it was cold outside. And I started taking pictures, and I suddenly realized, I love this. I love taking pictures of yarn, and I could take pictures of yarn all day long. And what I started to do was approach it in the same way that I would approach not taking pictures of an object, but taking pictures either of a person or taking pictures of a landscape. I was shooting across the yarn. I was looking at it and thinking as if it were hills and valleys, and it completely changed. It completely changed the way I approached it. And what I ended up doing was taking about 50 pictures of that first skein of yarn. And I loved every one of them. And in fact, if you ever delved into my computer at home, you would find that my hard drive is groaning because Space Cadet is now, what, 5 years old? Mm-hmm. And I don't think I have ever deleted a single photograph of yarn that I've ever taken because I love them all because they're all so – I just love it. It's so beautiful. I work so hard to dye these yarns and to put beautiful colors on them. And then I send them to other people. And I don't have them anymore. And the photographs are all I have left. I never delete the photographs.
So I'm sure, though, from that first outside photo shoot, which I think is hilarious, because when you say it's cold, you're in Pennsylvania. Space Cadet is out of Pittsburgh. Yes. And so when you say it's cold in the winter, it's cold, yes?
Yes, it's If I'm taking photos, especially in January or February, it's terribly cold. And the other thing is that when you take photos, you have to be completely still, right? Like I stop
shaking.
You do, and I stop breathing. Like I hold my breath as I'm taking the photos, but that means like you're keeping perfectly still, which means that your toes and your fingers start going, okay, we've had enough of this. What is this thing we're doing? We don't want to do this thing anymore. Let's go inside. We would like to hold a cup of tea, not this stupid cold camera.
So you, from that time to now, I'm sure you've seen a big evolution from your first images. Not that they probably weren't perfectly wonderful, but they've probably been perfected over time. And you mentioned something as you were just talking about how there's a bit of a difference of taking something on a person versus still life. And so I wanted to capture for the listeners today, even if you don't buy the first issue of Six Bits magazine, which is Unearth, you are actually sharing in Unearth an informative educational article on photography. But today you're going to share something a little bit different. So readers of Unearth will have it added to it. And just listeners in general are going to be able to take something away today and have some action. So can you tell us a little bit about the difference between what you and I are going to talk about today and what you're sharing with other listeners, and just briefly about what the difference is between in the magazine and today?
Yeah, I think there are two sides to getting really great photos of your finished objects. The thing is that knitters and crocheters, and they work for hours and hours to create these beautiful works of art, fabulous finished objects. And in our digital world, being able to take photos of them is the way that we share them. We share them on Ravelry, we share them on our blogs, we share them on Instagram. And you can take a finished object that is amazing, and you can either show off how amazing it is with photography that is at a level that finished object deserves, or you can make your amazing finished object look okay with okay photography. So in both today in the PDF and also in the magazine, I talk about how to really give your finished objects that kind of finishing touch that they really deserve with beautiful photographs. But I think there are two sides to that. One is how you approach your photography itself, mm-hmm. and the other is how you model your finished object. We often are modeling our objects ourselves, and I think we should because we've done all the work. But very few of us are professional models, right. And very few of us really know what we have to do to make those photos focus on the object and have us complement the object. So in the PDF for the listeners today, I talk about how you approach your photography in itself. And in the magazine, I talk about how to make yourself be more comfortable so that you are a better backdrop for your own finished object.
And that actually helps too. I noticed the idea is for us when we're wearing it, the article that you've done in Six Bits Unearth, but it also helps a ton for if you're the person behind the camera and you are taking photos of the model, things that you can do to help them. So,
yes.
So that's in the magazine, but today let's really give the listeners a few great practical ideas to do it. And I guess, so today we're talking about what?
Today we're talking about how you approach your photography. And the first tip that I would give is, it's my personal pet peeve.
Okay.
So I'll try not to sound, I'll try not to get quite as passionate about it as I feel, but I feel very passionate about it. And my first tip is please, 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 please don't shoot on your blocking board. I know you have just blocked your project out, and the lace work, if there's lace work, is all separated and it's looking amazing and you can see all the stitch definition and you're so excited about it because it's gorgeous, and it is gorgeous, but the blocking board is not gorgeous. And you can do so much better.
I'm going to jump in and interrupt you because I was writing this down as a note, but
okay.
I know some listeners are going to be like, oh, but that's me like 90% of the time. And, you know, raise your hand, but you are brilliant in capturing detail. And so mm-hmm. before you, and put your finger on where you're going with your end of things, because I know I'm taking us off track, but if you actually have images on the blocking board and you're just like, oh my gosh, they're so stunning and I have to capture it this way, you're saying that the reason we like to do it on the blocking board is because it's open and lovely and we can see that stitch definition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And sometimes when we put it up on something, we lose that. But I'm hearing, and I just want to clarify because I don't want to lose any listeners and they're like, oh my gosh, that's so me. But you're going to tell us that the things that we're doing on the blocking board, we're doing it because we want to capture those stitch definitions, right? Mm-hmm. And you're mm-hmm. going to try to translate how to move it from the blocking board and still capture that.
Well, the thing is that the point of blocking is that you are telling the fibers, no, no, I want you to sit like this, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's what you're doing. The fibers are all like, oh, no, we want to be all bunched up. And you're like, no, 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 we are going to be open. And we are going. And when you pull the pins out of your project after you've blocked it, it holds that shape.
It
Not
does.
Perfectly, but it holds that shape, that openness is there. It certainly doesn't look like it looked like when it came off the needles.
That's right.
So if you love that openness and you're wanting to take a picture of your project on the blocking board because you love how it looks, when you take it off, you're still going to have that openness. You're going to be able to see your lace work. Your cables are still going to pop or whatever. It's going to look amazing. But get it off the blocking board. Take it someplace else. Take it outside. Put it on a fence. Call me crazy. Put it on yourself. you're going to look great. Put it someplace else that's not on your dining table with a coffee mug in one corner and, I don't know, like your kid's homework in the other corner and your purple blocking board or whatever color it is that doesn't go with your green shawl or whatever, and all these pins sticking out. Take it outside and give it the kind of background it really deserves, because you've created something absolutely beautiful. And while it looks great on the blocking board, I promise you, it looks so much better not on the blocking board. And the proof in the pudding is that I have never, ever seen a project in a magazine photographed on a blocking board.
Right, especially
the
cover shot.
Editors, yeah. They know what they're doing. And they're like, I'm sure it got blocked first, but they're like, get it off that blocking board. We're not photographing it there. So this is,
yes.
And the thing is that I have customers who email me all the time with photos of their projects. And I love that. I love to see what they've made with Space Cadet Yarn. That is so awesome. And I want to share those photos. But very often they are photos on a blocking board. And while it shows me what they've done and I love to see it, it isn't the pictures that I end up choosing to share are the ones that they've taken afterwards, where they've gone outside or they've gone to some other background and really made it a beautiful photograph instead of just a blocking board photograph is functional, but you can then take it and take it someplace absolutely beautiful. I mean, and by beautiful, I don't even mean you have to take it to the beach or to the mountains or someplace stunning, just someplace where the stitches themselves and the object itself can really shine.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, it's like when, and for moms and dads or aunties and uncles out there that can relate to this, you get a picture from a kid and it's just adorable. Like I have stick figure images that I've saved from all the kids. And when they're on the icebox, they're not any less amazing and adorable. You're enjoying them. But I will tell you, the ones that I have taken and gotten matted and framed and put up in the living room, everybody that sees them are just like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest picture ever. And it's the framing. So that's kind of where you're going. Okay, so
that's
get it off
exactly
the block.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, get it off the blocking board, because while it's good to have even for an article on blocking or sharing on your blog the start to A to end Z, we are talking more about finished pictures, sharing the finished object with the world. So what's happening is I think we're losing the fact that when it's finished, it's actually off the blocking board. So you're taking a picture, and if you leave it on the blocking board, it's not really finished. So, okay, keep going. Let's hear from you, Yoda.
The second thing that I would suggest that people really do to improve their finished object photography is, don't be afraid of your camera. Explore your camera. And I know that cameras kind of freak people out. They have a lot of dials and a lot of buttons. And what do I do with all of these? I don't know. But I know that if I press this button, it takes a picture. So I'll just press that button and we'll just go with that. But for really beautiful finished object photography, one of the things you want to do is you want to get in and get close and get a really close-up shot of your stitches. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, you want to play a bit with your macro setting. Your macro setting is if you have a point-and-shoot or you have a DSLR, you're looking for usually a little flower. Your macro setting has a little flower symbol. If you're using your phone, there's a way to cheat and make it act like it has a macro setting. But if you start with a regular camera and you switch over to the little flower setting, so the macro, what it does is it changes the lens so that it has a shorter depth of field, which means that just a smaller area is in focus and you get that beautiful out of focusness mm-hmm. that you see in magazines and that you see in the photographs that you look on websites and you think, wow, that's a really beautiful picture. And part of the reason that you think it's really beautiful is because part of it is in focus and the rest of it disappears out of focus. Mm-hmm. That's your macro setting is going to do that. So look for that little flower, get down and close to your stitches. When you're using the macro setting, you need to be very, very close to what you're taking a photograph of. So get very close in. And just try that. It's for a lot of people, they're like, I never press any of the buttons on my camera except for the one that takes the picture. I don't mess with any of the other settings. But play with your macro setting a little bit and just see what you think of the photos that you take. If you're using a phone, now actually I have an iPhone.
Cheat.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you the cheat. I have an iPhone. I can't tell you how to cheat with another kind of phone because I don't really know. But there will be a cheat, and it's probably similar to this. If you have your phone, your iPhone, again, get down and low and close to your project, and then tap your screen. And some people will be going, yeah, I already know about this. But it's surprising, actually, the number of people who don't realize that when they tap the screen, you're telling your camera, I want you to focus here. So if you want it to focus in the lower right-hand corner, tap the lower right-hand corner. If you want it to focus dead center, tap the center. And an iPhone will adjust the lighting and it will adjust the focus to the spot where you've tapped. And if you're in good and close, it will create a semi-macro effect by letting the rest of the photo go out of focus. which it's amazing what a difference that makes to your final photos.
And an interjection for listeners that are listening at the moment, where you guys can actually dive in at this very moment and do something as you're listening to Stephanie and I talk. Listen to us chat and hop on the Ravelry thread. And under this week's episode, go ahead. If you don't have an iPhone, why don't you just pop on and share your phone and how your setting works for this very same thing? I'm sure it is
awesome.
Pretty much the same, but in case it's not, I think it'd be great for those people who use different phones. I honestly only use Mac products. If you sat me in front of a non-Mac computer, I wouldn't even know how to turn it on. So for those of you who don't use the same devices, go ahead and hop on that thread. Go over to our Ravelry group. It's the 6Bits Ravelry group, and find this week's thread. It's episode 4, and weigh in, share, and be a helper. Help somebody else make their story, make the illustrations and their stories just pop. So thanks,
absolutely,
Steph, for that.
Yeah.
Keep going.
The other thing that does, of course, is it gets people to explore. So
yeah.
I have purposely not told you how other phones work.
Yeah,
right?
Dig in there and explore. There you go. Good for you. Yeah, Stephanie really thought that one out. Good job.
Yeah, it was all planned.
Okay, so what else do you have for us? I know so far we've talked about take it off the blocking mat because you're done. You're taking finished object shots, and we want to just really share that essence of being finished. Explore, get in close, zoom in on the detail, play with your camera.
Right.
What else can knitters do today? You know, quick, simple things to improve specifically their still shots.
Yeah. Well, the last thing that I have, which I think is so important, is to let go of the fear of looking like a fool. And the reason is...
Well, I let go of that a long time ago.
Some of us have more practice than others.
Awkward is my norm.
But the reason is that the best shots come when you, as a photographer, get yourself, your body, into ridiculous positions. Because you need to be low and close to your object, or you need to be standing underneath it and looking up, or you need to be here, you need to be there. And I promise you, you are going to have to crouch or bend over or otherwise get yourselves into positions that really, they just are not complementary to usually your backside in any way, shape, or form. But it only lasts for a couple of seconds. You get the shot. It's a gorgeous shot. And then you can stand up and look like a normal person again. If you are worried about, like, oh my gosh, people are going to look at me, I look like an idiot. What you will do is only take really standard photos. Like, you just stand there and you'll just shoot head on and take a straight shot of your object. And those are nice, but they're kind of boring. The really great shots are the ones where you end up contorting yourself into ridiculous positions. In fact, I'm certain that my neighbors think I have some sort of a foot fetish because I have now for years taken so many photos where I am lying flat on the ground on my belly, taking photos of a friend's feet in a pair of socks because I want sock photos, right? And I want them in close. And so she'll be sitting, we're in the front yard because it's the best place to get the light. And she's sitting there with her feet sticking straight out, and I'm lying on the ground in front of her with my camera right up close to her feet. And I'm sure I'm like thinking, what are the neighbors thinking? And I'm certain they think I have some sort of, first off, a foot fetish, and secondly, some sort of deep need to publicly display my foot fetish.
Okay.
I'm trying to take sock photos, and in the end, when I get back in the house and I'm looking at, I've put the memory card into my computer, they're awesome photos, but in that moment when I'm taking them, I just have to take my pride and set it to one side and stop thinking about what people are thinking of me, because I'm sure I just look absolutely ridiculous.
Well, you know, it's really interesting to get that perspective. First, you know, the perspective that people are thinking you're ridiculous. People, believe it or not, don't think that as often as we think they're thinking that of us. And secondly, you know, their perspective if you allow it to inhibit yours, then mm-hmm. you're never going to see it differently. And that was something that when Melody and I were planning the first issue with Unearth being a topic that's so to the ground level, very in nature, mm-hmm. We really hashed out a lot of images. And then I can't even tell you the amount of time that I spent just talking with the different photographers and our team and said, you know, I need you to get down on the ground. This is my vision. I want to see the grass and the dirt from this level. And so there are a lot of examples, even in the issue, where perspective and where you are orienting your view from and out in the world to see teaches you so much more. So you as a knitter, when you're done with the project, you get to teach people the parts that really spoke to you by getting in and showing them these different angles that you've observed and you've noticed, and it brings much more to it. So I think that's a great point when you bring up about, you know,
it really does. And it's something that we don't often do because we do live our lives being normal, if you know what I mean.
Us.
We do.
No, I don't.
No, we do. We stand up for the most part. We don't crawl around on the floor on our bellies, not once we hit, you know, adulthood for sure. But when you do allow yourself to really start exploring different ways of approaching, especially your photography, I don't know, maybe you want to crawl around on the floor for other reasons. I don't want to know about that. But for photography purposes, if you start exploring different angles and stuff, you really do get some great perspectives, and what you see with your eye and what you see with your camera's lens completely changes.
Yeah. Well, those are some really awesome tips. And I love how you have actually gone the extra step and made something. It's something that we feel really strongly that this podcast is to do. And it's to share something with our listeners that they can take away from. You know, the magazine is great, but not everybody is subscribing. So if you're listening, you can print out these things that are not in the magazine, and they're activities and information and actionable things that you can do. And your PDF is fabulous.
Thank you.
But now I'd like to shift gears real quickly. I know we have a few more minutes together. And just out of curiosity from my end, you and I have been friends. We were virtual friends for a number of years. My very first podcast showed your mini skeins, which to me were like little, those little tiny pastels that you used to get as a kid and you'd color with, and they were all different. And, that's how they felt to me, like little mini morsels, bites to taste and enjoy. But
that's funny that you say that, because I think of them as yarn crayons.
Yeah.
I was trying to describe them once to somebody who was standing in my booth at a show, and she was holding this little packet of mini skeins, and she was going, "What do I do with these?" And I said, "You use them in the same way that you would use crayons to add a bit of color here, add a bit of color there. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you're knitting something that has a pocket, make the lining of the pocket a completely different color from anything else, or put the color along the very bottom edge of your cardigan, like the last two rows of your cardigan at the bottom." And she was like, "Oh, I see." If you think of them as yarn crayons rather than something that you're choosing like for a whole project, it just completely opens up the possibilities of what you can do with them. I absolutely love that.
And for somebody like me, I love, that's my favorite club to be in. I love the mini skein club. I've been in it since, it's been a long time. I was in it before I even knew you. And we met after I showed them off. But I like them because they're perfect for my attention span. They're like 20 grams.
Right.
Which I don't know what that translates into, like minutes or hours for me. But 20 grams is my attention span.
But actually, that's a really good point, because sometimes I don't finish projects because I love the color to start with, but then I'm bored with the color by the end. But that never happens with mini skeins.
Oh,
they're
like
instant gratification. And then next one, next color. Thank you.
Well, we kind of met after I did the podcast and you and I started talking. And so we've been friends for a number of years and just recently getting a chance to meet in person. And I'm always interested from our relationship in just as encouraging each other in business. I know we have that as a great relationship. And so for me, I personally would love to know what business lesson that you've learned starting this business that you didn't expect, because some of our listeners are not only knitters, but they're businessmen and women that that this kind of is an umbrella that fits any business. Like, what is it that you're learning as a business owner that you just were like, whoa, I didn't see this lesson being on the list of things to learn?
Well, you know, this is the first business that I have owned previous to starting Space Cadet. I worked in corporate. I worked for Fortune 500 companies and sat at a desk and did important desk kind of things on computers. And when you're saying, you know, what is a lesson, it's really hard to pick just one, because this has been such an about face for me. And I learn something new every single day. But I have to say that when I started this, I was thinking of it in terms of a business and making what I make, which is hand-dyed yarn, and selling it to people. And I was kind of thinking that that was what it was focused on, and that was where it ended. Like, you sell it and then you're thinking about the next thing. And what I've learned is that at the end of the day, and especially in this kind of a business, which is based around knitting and crocheting, it isn't a case of just selling things to customers. In fact, they're not just customers. What I have learned, and what is so exciting, is that in building this business, I have been building a community of people who come together on Ravelry to talk, or as members of the club, and they come back again and again and again. I see the same names on mailing labels month after month after month. I honestly, it's fabulous. I get emails from people. You know, I don't think that people who manufacture staples, actual staples or paper clips, often get emails from people saying, look how I used your paper clip. Look, I stapled some paper today. I get emails from my customers saying, look what I made with this, and look how the colors are popping, and look at this, and look at that. And, you know, I started it with this stitch, but it didn't work, and I frogged it, and I changed it to that stitch, and it looks amazing. I love that. I love that. And the first time I got emails like that, I was kind of like, what's going on? Wow, this is great. But I sold them their yarn. What's going on? Why are they? What is happening? This is not what I thought of as like a normal selling relationship. And it isn't a normal selling relationship. Mm. As I said, this doesn't happen to people who make paperclips. But it happens in this industry, and especially in this community. And I absolutely love it. We just had a special limited edition of some Space Cadet project bags that we sold on the website. And now that I've finally figured out this community aspect, and it makes sense to me, and I'm not like confused by it anymore. I sent out an email to all my people, and I'm like, everyone who bought the nerd bag, please get on Ravelry and show me pictures of it, because we sent it out to, I was looking at the labels. It went to Wyoming and Montana and New Mexico and Canada and Hong Kong and Britain. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the Space Cadet is going all around the world. I want to see him. I want to see him all around the world. And people are coming back with photographs of their Space Cadet bag in action, where they are at their knit night, filled with yarn.
Aww.
I mean, this is great. This is better than running a business. This is, it is. It's like, I mean, if I opened a shop selling, I don't know, paint, this would not happen. I would never get this, but it's just so awesome to really get to know my customers personally, to know where they're using our yarn, or in this case, our project bags, and And to have that relationship continue beyond just, hey, I went and bought some yarn from you, to, hey, I went and bought some yarn. This is what I made with it. This is where I'm wearing it. I mean, I've had pictures from people's proms, people's weddings, because they've knitted a shawl for their wedding. I mean, how many shop owners get pictures back from somebody's wedding? How awesome is that?
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's like, I mean, that is that a business lesson? I don't know. Is it just a life lesson? But it's a really, really cool thing that I totally wasn't expecting when I very first opened an Etsy shop and put some skeins up in the shop and was like, here's some yarn, come and get it. That it would turn into this community and these clubs and these personal connections with people all around the world. It's fabulous.
And what a great reminder listening to you as the business owner that we as creative people who are using these tools to do our creative expression, that you guys really do want to know, you do want to hear, and you do want to see. And yeah, I encourage listeners now, you know, if whatever it is that you're working on right now, would be fun to snap a picture and, you know, at the very least post it on Instagram and tag the designer of the scarf and the dyer for the yarn, and just let them know, hey, this is what I'm doing, because it's very exciting.
It is super exciting. It is. And the thing is that when we're dyeing, you know, we're creating colorways that we think are going to look great when they're knitted up, especially the one of the kind colorways. Mm-hmm. We don't swatch them because they're one of a kind. We dye them, we do something that we think is going to be great, but how it actually works up depends on that knitter, depends on their gauge, depends on the stitches they choose, depends on maybe they crochet it instead. And being able to, we saw it as a skein going out, but being able to see how those colors work in the actual fabric it's like, I don't know how to put it. It's like completing a circle. Closing the circle. It's so awesome.
Well, before we say goodbye, because you have shared so much and there's just such great content, I think, for listeners. I think since we're getting to know you and we're getting to hear your voice, you're the advocate for your yarn. We know that the colors are great, but what I am hoping that is in the next 60 to 120 seconds, can you pick one attribute of one yarn of yours that you think makes your yarn business so stellar?
One attribute, it's like you're asking me to choose between my children. This is so hard.
You're already 4 seconds in, girl.
All right, I know. So under pressure, I will actually tell you about Lyra, because it is one of my favorite yarns.
Oh, it's my favorite. Yes, I love this yarn. Go ahead. I won't interrupt you.
Stop taking my seconds. The reason that I love Lyra, it's a sport weight yarn. It's 100% superwash merino. But it is a cabled 8-ply. And what that means is that unlike most yarns where the individual plies are twisted one way and then they are all spun together the other way, Lyra is made of what looks like, if you untwist it a little and look, it looks like four individual yarns that are plied one way, then plied together the other way, but then all four of those are brought together and plied again. So it's cabled. And that's what cabled means. And if you're a spinner, this will all make sense to you. If you're not a spinner, this might sound a little bit confusing, but I would actually suggest you get a skein of this yarn and untwist it with your fingers and you will see what I mean. But
or,
when it is
to interrupt
cable
you, I'll give you your minute back. Last week I was talking about this very thing, which I don't think you listened to last week's episode, which is cool, because this makes it more candid, but knitters can actually listen to last week's episode 3 for some information and a downloadable PDF there to do exactly what you're saying here. So, okay, back to Lyra, the amazing cabled yarn that I love.
Right. Well, what it does is when you have it cabled so that it's twisted one way and then twisted another and then twisted again, all these individual twists make it hard for the fibers to go flat. they can't because they're twisting all different directions. So just like curly hair has more volume than straight hair, generally speaking, a cabled yarn is rounder and poofier and smooshier, these are technical terms, than a non-cabled yarn. So you have this yarn, and I'm looking at it right now, I'm holding it in my hands, and it's super round and super even. And then when you knit with it, because it has all these different plies all being twisted in different directions, and they all kind of want to sit away from each other, it gives it incredible stitch definition. When you're knitting with it, you're doing cables, your cables are sitting up. They sit proud away from the rest of the fabric. Anything that you do that's adding texture, you can really see that texture with this yarn. And it's so much fun. But even in regular stockinette stitch, it just looks fantastic. You can see each individual stitch, and it's like it's in hyper focus. And I absolutely love that about this yarn. And it's so funny because I have had so many customers buy this yarn and then come back to me and be like, "This is my favorite yarn ever." And I'm like, "I know, I told you, I know." And I know that you feel the same way about it as well.
I do. I love it.
It's a great yarn. I really, really like it. So there, I have chosen one child to talk about today, and all the rest. I'm sitting here in this room completely surrounded by yarn, and the rest of them are all looking at me daggers like, why did you pick
No, them? They don't have ears. they can't hear, so we're not hurting them. I'm hoping so. Well, I can't wait for the next time I have you on, because I already have a list of questions, and then the one is, the next time you're on, you're going to talk to us about the Space Cadet image, the little guy and his start. But for today, thank you so much for sharing just so much with us. I think.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I so enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Well, I hope you enjoyed the time with Stephanie as much as I did. I'm so thankful that Stephanie shared with us today. She has a wonderful blog where she shares lots of great ideas for knitters, crocheters, fiber lovers, as well as plenty of enabling. So be sure to check her out at www.spacecadetyarn.com. And now, how about some free yarn? Yes, please. Every subscriber to Six Bits Publication is automatically entered in a giveaway for yarn every month for a project shown in each issue. Next week, we will announce the first subscriber to win and the amazing yarn that they've won. I want to make sure that everyone feels welcome. So even if you don't subscribe, well, we aren't leaving you out. Simply head over to the iTunes review area and leave us a review. Then snap a screenshot and email it to me at hellomelissa@sixbitsstorybooks.com, hellomelissa@6bitsstorybooks.com. You will win a free pattern and yarn to knit along with us in our first KAL if you are chosen. We are kicking off the KAL on Monday, November the 2nd, and you can knit any project from our first issue along with us. So from November 2nd to January 2nd, we're going to be knitting and learning and sharing stories together. Lots of amazing prizes, beautiful yarns, knitting bags, notions, and did I already mention lots of yarn? So grab your issue of Unearth and be ready to join in with us on November the 2nd. So until next time, my deepest heartfelt thanks for choosing to spend time with me. Looking forward to an extra special edition next episode. So may your week be filled with brilliant creative moments. Aloha.